It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now, here's your host, John Schmell.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. That's a number for you guys if you want to call in. You can also chime in on Twitter at hashtag GiantsChat. Good morning, everybody. Hope everyone's having a good one. Of course, before we get started and get to the football stuff, obviously all the thoughts and prayers of everyone here at the Giants organization out to the people that are dealing with the bombing incident up at the Boston Marathon in Boston. And obviously our thoughts and prayers, much more important stuff going on than what's going on in the world of football and the world of sports. But we carry on, and today we are joined by Paul Schwartz. He covers the Giants and has for a long time for the New York Post. Paul, good morning. How's everything going?
Good, John. Getting that draft coverage geared up, I guess, soon enough. Free agency seems to be on the way out, and certainly the draft is on the way in.
No question, and we'll touch on the draft in a second, but I imagine, much like most other people in the media that cover the Giants, not exactly shocked Victor Cruz was not at the first day of the offseason program yesterday.
No, I would have been shocked if he was there, quite frankly. Why should he show up? He doesn't have a contract. You know, I mean, you can get a waiver and sign a participation agreement, but there's really no reason for him to, especially this week. The free agency restricted period is still in effect. He has until Friday to get an offer and sign an offer sheet from another team. He wants more money. We all know that. He has not signed his tender, which will pay him close to $2.9 million if he chooses to sign it. You know, the long-term arrangement contract that the Giants would like to sign with Victor Cruz has not been agreed upon yet, so no big deal. I don't think it's a big deal that he's not there. I don't think the Giants think it's a big deal that he's not there. They're not going to get bent out of shape of a couple of, you know, off-season voluntary workouts in mid-April that he's not going to be at. You know, I think after this week, after that, you know, there's no chance of an offer sheet, which was, you know, really remote at best that he was going to get one of those.
Right.
After that's signed, sealed, and delivered, and there's no chance of that happening, you know, maybe next week they can kind of rethink all this. But, you know, I think Victor Cruz wants more money, and he's not going to be there for a while probably.
So what do you think the process is going to be? From what I can tell, based on what you just said, you don't think we're going to have either a quick signing of the tender after Friday, nor are we going to have a quick long-term contract after Friday. You think this might play out over the course of a few weeks? Because I guess once the deadline passes, it does somewhat change the negotiating position of the two sides, doesn't it?
It does a little bit. I don't think anyone fooling themselves into thinking, though, that there's a, you know, $50 million offer, you know, lurking in the weeds right now, you know, waiting to spring on the Giants from another team. I don't think that's happening. I don't think anyone's expecting that to happen. But you're right. Once that possibility is 100% gone, starting on Saturday, then it can be, okay, you know, Victor knows he cannot play for another team, knows that he's either this or sit out, you know, and then risk fines. And also, you know, we have to remember, Victor Cruz, as you know, John, is a very public guy. He's got a great image. He's very image conscious. And although Giant fans love him, he's an incredibly popular guy. As we all know, that number 80 is a wildly successful, you know, jersey on the sale racks and
yep.
Everything, and quite not for sale. It goes full value. You know, it makes a lot of money. But you know, he risks kind of ruining some of that if he does not sign, if he hangs out, if he, you know, if it's, you know, brought out to light the Giants are offering somewhere, you know, more than $7 million a year and Cruz doesn't think it's enough, you know, then he risks losing some of that sterling image that he has, and I don't think he wants to do that. I don't think this is going to be a pedal-to-the-metal, ugly situation, but, you know, I do think it has to play itself out, and it's not there yet.
All right, Paul, let's look ahead forward to the NFL draft. I haven't seen a draft in quite a while. I've been looking at all these different mock drafts, and, you know, everyone is projecting these players to go. And I don't even know who's going to be on the board at 19, let alone who the Giants are going to pick. I could think of 5 to 8 guys that I think are likely that the Giants could be interested in when they pick at 19. But I don't know who's going to be there. And I don't think a lot of people at this point know who's going to be left on the board when the Giants go at 19.
Well, I mean, speak for yourself. I know exactly who's going to be there. And I have a pretty strong knowledge of who they're going to pick.
Who are they picking, Paul? The best player available?
You think I'm going to give this out on free airwaves when I work for the New York Post? And all your listeners, all your legion of listeners will need to go buy the New York Post every day, you know, the newspaper version, so they can spend the money. And I will have hints every day leading up to the draft. And those hints, I would say, over my long, illustrious history of covering the Giants, about 26% of the time have been correct on who they will pick. You're right. This is, you know, when you're at 19, it's always kind of, you know, it's easier to, you know, in some ways than when the Giants are picking 31 to figure who they're going to be. But from what people say and from what I'm gathering in my initial study here, this draft is very, very fluid, you know, more than other years. I mean, people have doing mock drafts this year and don't have a quarterback in the first round.
Yeah.
And without those, you know, signposts where you say this team's going to pick a quarterback or that team, that I know a lot of people who do mock drafts are worried that their first and second round pick might not be right this year. And that's very unusual. So yeah, I agree, you know, all kidding aside, that at 19, I would say there could be, you know, at least 5 or 6 or 7 guys who the Giants will look at and say, wow, we didn't think he'd be there, and then they'll pounce on him, much like they did with Prince Amukamara, who they did not think would be there when they picked.
Well, Paul, on the bright side, after Jerry Reese's press conference on Thursday, we should have a pretty crystal clear idea of exactly who the Giants are going to pick at 19, since Jerry usually, you know, talks about so many different draft prospects and really tips his cap a lot at these pre-draft press conferences.
Well, if we're lucky, Jerry Reese will give us a good analysis of the draft 4 years ago, and then we'll be able to assess that draft. Yeah, all I have to say about our Thursday night meeting with Jerry is, I hope the Giants are preparing a nice hot lunch for us, because we will need some sustenance that day, and Jerry will not be providing it for us.
All right. Obviously, the Giants always go by the mantra, pick the best player available, but need does come into play. They're not going to pick a quarterback in 19. At least I don't think they are. Who knows? Where do you think, though, Paul, the Giants' greatest need lies right now heading into the draft? What position do you think is most likely, not only with that first-round pick, but that second-round pick as well, which a lot of people think could have first-round value based on how the talent is distributed in this draft?
Well, for the first time in a long time, I'm not saying it's their number one, you know, starred need, but it is a glaring need in my mind, and that is for a pass-rushing defensive end.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more.
You say, well, what are you, crazy? I mean, they're loaded with, okay, even with Osi gone, they have JPP, who's a pro bowler. They have Justin Tuck, who has been a pro bowler. Mathias Kiwanuka moving back to defensive end, it looks like. That's three guys right there. What are you, crazy? They need another guy? Well, I'm not crazy, and they do need another guy. Number one, their whole defensive system is predicated on getting to the quarterback with a four-man pass rush. Last year, they were lousy at it. Justin Tuck is coming off 2 subpar years, and this is a put-up-or-shut-up last year of his contract year for him. Mathias Kiwanuka is a good player, but, you know, I don't think he's the second coming of OCU Manure in his prime right now. And JPP, who was great, absolutely phenomenal in 2011, was less than that last year. And so he's got to kind of pick it up a little bit. So, you know, Justin Tuck is on the last year of his contract, like I said. So there is definitely a need for defensive end, and I also think there is a need for an offensive right tackle, because right now we don't know who the starter is there. I presume it is David Deal, who lost his job last year, let's face it, not just because of injury, also because of performance, and his back took a pay cut, which is what the Giants think of him when they ask a veteran to take a pay cut is because they feel he is not playing up to the contract that he was once given. So I think if the Giants can find a right tackle who they feel, you know, this guy can step in, maybe not in game one, but in game five, that is definitely a viable option. I think defensive end is a viable option. I think linebacker is a need. They will not pick one in the first round. I'd be shocked if they do. And I also think cornerback is a very, very important position, because you can run a scenario through your head at cornerback where the Giants are very weak at that position if things don't work out.
Yeah, Paul, to me, this is a front 12 draft. You're either going to pick someone on the front seven on the defensive side, or you're going to pick somebody in the offensive line with those first two picks. And for the most part, it's because last year, the Giants, in a lot of games, which is not characteristic of this franchise, got bullied around by a lot of teams in these games. They couldn't stop the run all year long. They didn't run the ball as consistently as they would have liked. They were better than they were in 2011, but still not good enough. And Eli Manning, even though the sack numbers weren't there, was under some level of duress at times during the season. To me, the Giants need to get bigger, tougher, and more consistent up front on both sides in this draft, and I think that'll go a long way towards making them better in 2013.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that, but let me turn the tables on you. Do you think the Giants will draft a linebacker in the first round if one is sitting there at 19?
I don't think it's out of the question, but the way the talent lines up in this draft, the way I'm looking at it, I think they're going to get better value going to a different position, whether it's offensive line or defensive line.
Yeah, I don't disagree. But now, defensive tackle is a position, I think, where they fortified themselves. Now, they've added a couple of old guys from the Eagles, or semi-old guys, but... They seem to be in a position there where, I mean, I'd be frustrated if they would take a defensive tackle in the first round just because there's a logjam in front of them. Unless this guy is just crazy draft board value, I don't think they'll do that. Then you look in defensive end, which is another guy who's not going to see the field right away, but as we all know, they like to stockpile those guys. Yeah, offensive line, you know, if there's a guy like DJ Fluker from Alabama, who the Giants, you know, if they look at him and say he's 330 pounds, he is going to be our Kareem McKenzie, you know, 10-year guy at right tackle at some point. I would have no issue at all drafting a guy like that, because it's a need, it would be a value, and let's face it, the Giants did run the ball better last year, but that's, you know, the Giants are good. They have a good, stable offensive line, and, you know, right now it's kind of in a breakdown mode in some places.
Yeah, the one reason I'm not going to completely discount defensive tackle is they only really have two guys under contract beyond this season. That's Marcus Kuhn, who clearly, who knows what he's going to be coming off that knee injury. And then you have Cullen Jenkins. Linval Joseph's a free agent. Sean Rogers could go. Mike Patterson only under a one-year deal. So I think their future, even though they have a lot of guys this year, and you're right, they've stockpiled. They have a good five or six guys that could be rotational players here. Down the line, I think their future at defensive tackle at this point might be a little bit cloudy.
Well, if they draft a defensive tackle in the first round, that tells me that they have no faith in Marvin Austin, who is a second-round pick. You know, he's done nothing on the field for 2 years through injury, through performance, and that would be a real, you know, a real damaging blow to the scouting system.
Yeah.
Because this guy was drafted in the second round to be a starter, you know, to be a big-time player. And, you know, he's still on a roster. It's easy to forget about him because he doesn't play. You know, and they have signed guys to play in front of him, you would think. But, you know, this is obviously a year of decision for Marvin Austin. Can he get on the field? Can he do anything? And, you know, if he doesn't, then that's a second-round pick that really is unquestionably, the dreaded B-word, bust.
Now, Paul, you're 100% right. How do you feel about taking a couple phone calls from Giant fans out there?
Sure. As long as they don't give me questions I don't know the answer to.
Well, I can't guarantee that. These questions can be a little bit tough. We're going to start out and go all the way out to Taiwan and say good morning to Brooke. Brooke, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How's it going today, guys?
Doing well, Brooke.
All right, good. Well, you know, it's hard to get my points in after what you just went through, Paul. You sound like you know you got all the bases covered. So I guess I'll just weigh in with the free agent moves. I really am pleased with what Jerry and the front office have done in the offseason, especially scoring Dan Connor in the middle. He's a great run-stopping, run-coverage kind of player in the middle, which is great. I've called in the past and been very sad about our run defense. So I think going into the draft, I agree with you, Paul. There's just so many guys of value at positions that we need that – Jerry's going to look around and go, gosh, we've got 5-6 guys here. What do you think? You know, there's going to be corners. There's going to be Desmond Trufant probably available. Alec Ogletree will probably be available. Manti Te'o could be available. DJ Fluker could be available. And there's some great defensive tackles like Sylvester Williams, Kawan Short, maybe the Sheldon Richardson kid. There's going to be so much need with value there for us. It'll be really interesting what we do. Guys, do you think there'll be a trade, like a possible trade down?
Jerry Reese, you know, usually does not like to trade his draft picks. I'd be a little surprised this year. The only way that could be, I would think, if there's another team at 19 who has a player they are desperate to get, and the Giants look at their board and say, you know what, we'd be happy with five guys here. You know, which could be. You make a very good point. There could be a circle of around five or six guys, and Jerry Reese says, we'd be happy with all these guys. And if someone wants to move up to 19, you know, from 23 or 24 to get a guy, which is unlikely in this draft, but certainly possible. You never know who teams fall in love with. There could be a possibility. Yeah. You make some good points on some of these guys. No question.
I look at the comment you made earlier about you can't have enough pass rushers. And you do look around and you paint a scenario in your mind and you say, okay, well we've got Justin coming off of an off year and JPP coming off an off year, so they'll be motivated. But we've got an unproven Kiwanuka to a degree as a full-time player at the defensive line to OC standard. And we do have Adrian Tracy, who I believe will show his worth this year. But that's four guys, and there could be an injury. And there's a group of pass rushers there at defensive end, like Deion Warner, Tank Carradine, and there's one more guy that's escaping me right now that are going to be there at the 19th spot and possibly there through to our next pick. I believe it's in the 50s, or excuse me, 30s. And it's an exciting time of year for it to be a Giants fan. I give an A to the front office so far in the offseason. I'm very pleased. I'm excited to have Jerry Reese as a general manager. He's fantastic. He's done everything possible. That's my comment about the offseason. I just want to weigh in one time on the draft class bracketology. I was so pleased to see 1981 come out the winner. You can't ever, ever, ever say that a once-in-a-generational player, an icon, an LT, is not worth what he's worth. He was the man behind two Super Bowls. He's the face of our franchise's legacy. He's one of the greatest players to ever put pads on, and I'm so happy that his draft class won. I know that John thought that the Banks draft was better with Hostetler.
Yep.
I want to get your comment on that right now, John, before I get off the phone.
All right, Brooke. How
did you feel when 1981 came through?
Well, Brooke, I got to be honest with you. I thought the 84 draft class was better than the 81 draft class, and I thought it was pretty obvious. You know, I realize that Lawrence Taylor is who he is, and you know, potentially the best defensive player in NFL history. I get all that. But when you have a draft class that gives you Carl Banks, William Roberts, Jeff Hostetler, Lionel Emanuel, and Gary Reasons, guys that contributed to two Super Bowls and really formed the backbone of two Super Bowl teams, I'm going to pick the depth with multiple starters. And by the way, there is star power there. Jeff Hostetler was your starting quarterback for a Super Bowl. Carl Banks was on the all-decade team from the 80s. To me, 84 was clearly better, but the fans chose LT, and obviously all the power goes to the fans.
Yeah.
All right, appreciate it, Brooke.
For sure, guys. Thanks a lot for taking my call.
Take it easy.
Have a good day.
Hey, Paul, I'm not sure if you paid attention to that, but we had this draft class challenge on Giants.com where fans voted for, like, the best draft class in Giants history. And believe it or not, the finals came down to two draft classes from the 80s, the 81 draft class with LT, Bill Yard, and Byron Hunt against that 84 draft class with the guys I mentioned. And the fans gave the nod to Lawrence Taylor, which I was surprised by. I thought they would like the depth of that 84 class a little bit better.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why when you show up at the stadium, half the stadium was wearing LT jerseys. Right. I mean, LT, you know, when you look at that draft, the second-round pick was not good. The third-round pick was not good. The fourth-round pick was not good.
Nope.
The fifth-round pick, nothing special. You know, there's a tremendous amount of players in that draft who did absolutely nothing. I mean, the eighth-round pick, Billy Yard, was the best player in that draft after LT.
No question.
But that's like saying, you know, after Tom Brady, there's not another good quarterback on the Patriots or something like that. I mean, but you know what? You know what I think a draft is very underrated?
What's that?
more recently, and it's an amazing draft because I remember going into the draft in 2005 and thinking, you know, the Giants don't even have a first-round draft pick because they gave it up the year before to Eli. It's not going to be an interesting draft. Think about this. Corey Webster, Justin Tuck, Brandon Jacobs picks in the second, third, and fourth round. I mean, that is arguably one of the best drafts. I mean, they only drafted four guys that year.
Yeah.
Three of them were full-time starters on and backbones of a team that won two Super Bowls. I mean, Corey Webster's not a Pro Bowler. Justin Tuck was a Pro Bowler. Brandon Jacobs was not a Pro Bowler. But considering where they drafted, 2, 3, and 4, they were tremendously productive players for a long time for teams that won a lot of games and two Super Bowls. That was a good draft.
Yeah, that was actually in our Final Four. That got to our Final Four. It was 2005, 84, 81, and then 2003 was the other group in our finals. And you had David Deal in round 5. You had David Tyree in that draft. Willie Ponder to a lesser extent. Vasante Schienko was in that draft. He didn't do a whole lot for the Giants, but had a good career in Minnesota. And the funny thing, you know, much like 2005 where the Giants didn't have a first-round pick, in 2003, that was the William Joseph draft class where the first-round pick didn't work out, but you got great value later on.
Yeah, I'm surprised that the 2000 draft of Ron Dane and Ron Dixon and Ralph Brown and, of course, Dahani Jones, you know, multimedia star, was not in the top group. That was one of my big favorites there.
Yes, that one did not even make the field of 32, if memory serves me right.
That was in the NIT of bracketology draft tournaments?
Yes, correct. Correct.
Yeah, I understand.
Back to the calls at 201-939-4513. Derek's down in Delaware. Derek, good morning. What's up, pal?
I'm here. I got actually three main questions, but you got to bear with me because I don't really know how to talk about it. Like,
do your
you guys
best.
Do like professional wise,
okay.
But I'll do my best. All right. First off, I heard about the Eagles getting the defensive coach for the Giants. Now, is that still in transaction, or did that actually happen?
What do you mean specifically? They hired a coach that used to coach for the New York Giants?
No, like I heard, like they were planning on like buying our coach or something or some crap. I don't even know.
Yeah, Derek. Like, honestly, I have no idea what you're talking about. So why don't you move on to question
okay,
number
fine.
Two?
All right. My second thing is my main thing is the Mike Patterson guy off the Eagles. I heard a lot of people are talking about this guy. They're, like, saying that he's going to make noise coming into our team and everything. Now, I know with my past preferences of watching the Giants play the Eagles all the time, the Eagles are a hard, hard defense and everything else. Do you guys think, personally, he'll make noise now that we are getting him where he signed?
Well, but Mike Patterson didn't play a whole lot of football last year because of an off-the-field injury. But he was one of those guys, Paul, that was very good in rotation for the Eagles. They're one of those guys that run those hockey shift defensive lines where they bring in a bunch of guys, take out a bunch of guys. And he was pretty disruptive at defensive tackle. But at his age and considering he didn't play last year, Paul, how much do you think he has left and how much do you think he's going to be able to contribute this year on the defensive line?
He was a guy I noticed when they played the Giants, right? I thought he was a very effective run stopper. I'm certainly more excited about Cullen Jenkins, the signing of Cullen Jenkins, than I am of Mike Patterson. I think Mike Patterson is an interesting story. He was a good player who had a very serious, when you type the words brain surgery in your story about a player who's playing football, you don't kind of gloss over that. You know what I mean? I mean, he had a rare condition and, cost him basically a year and he had to have surgery. Now, he did come back in place and I imagine the Giants have checked him out and everything's fine with that. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, I'm not expecting a lot from him, really. I mean, I'm expecting a lot from Cullen Jenkins. I think he's going to, very capably fill the void left behind when the Giants cut Chris Canty. I mean, I think he's a really good player. And obviously, Chris Snee agrees in every press report that the Giants have put out about Cullen Jenkins. They quote Chris Snee seemingly happy that he's here, or definitely happy he's here. Patterson, I think, will be a guy who will, have to make the roster, frankly. And if he does, there'll be a place for him.
Derek, thanks for the call, pal.
All right, no problem.
Have a good one. Final call with Paul before we say goodbye. Let's go to James down in Texas. James, what's up?
All right, how you guys doing this morning?
Doing well, James.
Well, I had a question I was going to ask about the first round draft, but you had all your bases covered. So what I think I'll do is I'll just think about how the Giants ended last year, and I just have a quick question for you, buddy.
Sure.
I just, being in the NFC East, and it's pretty much always a live four-way race, you know, some kind of way, even if the bottom team of the division gets a shot at the team at the top, you know, over the years, you know, with Jerry Reese and his leadership, the Giants have always brought in good talent. But, you know, I think of, I guess, going into this year, with all the young guys that we have, do you really think that there's a chance that Eli could get back to the Super Bowl and maybe, you know, challenge Tom Brady's legacy?
Well, challenging Tom Brady's legacy is a tough one. I mean, he's had a great, you know, career as an NFL quarterback. And you're right, the NFC East is a very tough division, top to bottom. I still think it's one of the deepest divisions in all football. But, Paul, you know, Eli did have a little bit of a down season last year. You know, do you contribute that more to his play or more to the fact that Akeem Nicks was banged up most of the year with that knee?
Well, Nicks is
I think that there was contributing factors with an inconsistent running game and with his receivers being in and out. It's hard to lock in on timing. And then one of my questions this year is the tight end position. So even though we've brought in Myers, but he's new to the system, no telling how he's going to fit. And, you know, the Giants are predicated on a blocking and receiving tight end. So I'm just hoping, you know, that he'll fit there and at least give some experience where Robinson doesn't have it.
All right, James, thanks for the call, pal.
All right.
You have a good one. And, Paul, look, going back to Eli for a second, I think he's going to connect with Brandon Myers fine. He's shown the ability to bring in all these new tight ends, and it works out fine, whether it's Martellus Bennett, Jake Ballard. You know, Myers had that great year in Oakland last year. I think he's going to be okay. And I think with Akeem Nicks back, there's no reason Eli Manning can't have the type of year he had in 2011.
Well, I mean, he's a $100 million quarterback. He's,
exactly.
He's in the prime of his career. I mean, you bet that the Giants certainly think that, and there's no reason not to think that. But yeah, I mean, Eli did not have, you know, he went in some games. We were quoting stats back to his terrible rookie year with some of the ineffectiveness he had in not getting touchdowns, not throwing touchdown passes, quarterback ratings, things like that. So yeah, but I think Akeem Nicks was such a glaring absence, whether he was not on the field or he was on the field and just a shell of what he normally is. It's really, when you look at what he did out there, in retrospect, he shouldn't have been on the field as much as he was. He was producing very little. I'm not really second-guessing, because you can't not put a guy like that on the field if he says he can play. But, you know, it's going to be very interesting. You have Victor Cruz with his contract situation, which I think one way or another, I'm fairly certain he's going to be on the field. And then you have Akeem Nicks, who's just said yesterday that he's at full speed running with his knee and foot issue supposedly behind him. You know, if Nicks comes back, it's almost like adding a Pro Bowl receiver. Myers, I think, will be okay. I think he'll be fine. The thing that's interesting to me is, what happens if Tyler Eifert, the Notre Dame tight end, is sitting there? And this guy is considered such a stud. The Giants, you know, other than Jeremy Shockey, you are not going to take a tight end at number one. But that guy is considered such a franchise-type tight end. Brandon Myers is here on a one-year contract. It would be interesting if they would pass him up to see what kind of career he has and then what Myers does this year.
Yeah, I know, and a lot of people say Eifert is a two-way tight end, too, something the Giants always want. Paul, I want to squeeze one more guy in. Dave in Rochester, one of our callers, wanted to talk to you tonight on the line. I'm going to bring him in real quick. Dave, real fast for Paul, what do you got?
All right, thanks, guys. Hey, Paul, I just wanted to see with RG3 and then with Chip Kelly, I wanted to see what you thought about the division this year. I think the addition of Chip Kelly, and I think Romo's got something to prove this year with that big money. I wanted to see what you thought about how the play of the division would go down this year. Is it a little tougher than past?
Well, I don't know if it's tough as in the past, but it is, you know, it's always a very, very competitive division. You know, last year, let's face it, the Eagles are coming off a terrible year. You know, a terrible year. They got rid of their coach, and now they've hired a new coach who was a prolific winner at Oregon. You know, okay, so we don't know what the deal would be with them. They'll be improved, I would imagine, but they still have the same quarterback in Michael Vick, who was very inconsistent. So I think the Eagles are not a team you can say they are a playoff contender right now. The Redskins were tremendously exciting last year. They have an incredibly dynamic quarterback and a very solid team. Will the quarterback stay healthy? If you say yes, they're going to be good. If you say no, then I don't think they will be good. I think they have a big question mark. And the Cowboys are the Cowboys. Talented. Romo puts up tremendous numbers, usually plays pretty well against the Giants. But they are mired in mediocrity. So, you know, I mean, the Giants, you can't look at this division and say this is a killer division and the Giants are going to have to scrape and claw. I think the Giants will certainly compete in the division. You know, this is not the West now. The West is becoming the wild, wild West with the 49ers and the Seahawks just getting better, you know, exponentially. The Giants are in a very competitive division, but I don't think you can look out there and say, oh, my God, there's a monster in this division like the Patriots or the 49ers or something like that.
Yeah, you feel like you're going to have one of those years again where three or maybe four teams are going to be between 7 and 10 wins, and whatever team's left standing at the end has a good chance of winning the division.
Yeah, we thought so last year. We thought there was no bad team, and the Eagles became a bad team. So,
true.
You know, it can happen quickly.
All right, Paul, I'm going to put you on the spot before you say goodbye. Who are the Giants picking the first round next Thursday night?
Well, I mean, I haven't done it for the paper yet, and subject to change, okay, I will take DJ Fluker, the offensive tackle from Alabama.
Good stuff, Paul. Paul, thanks so much for joining this morning, and we look forward to seeing you on Thursday morning when we get all of the golden nuggets from the Giants general manager about their pick in a week.
You got it. Anytime, John.
Thank you, Paul. I appreciate it. That's Paul Schwartz in the New York Post. Does an excellent job. We thank him for joining us, and he's covering the Giants for a long time. Really does a great job. Good dude, too. Everybody, thanks for joining us today on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Thanks to Paul for taking our calls with us. Great work out of him. And tomorrow we will be joined by Ray Ratto, who's a special contributor to USA Today, a draft expert, draft guy, and we'll go through all of the draft stuff in terms of the NFL, break down the prospects for us, and we'll get all the details on some of the guys the Giants could pick in the NFL draft this year. So thanks for joining us, everybody. Big Blue Kickoff Live comes your way every weekday morning on Giants.com at 10 a.m. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com.